We are starting Parshas Miketz. It says, "Vayimiketz shnasayim yomim uparucholim yomim el yor." It was at the end of 2 years, day to day, meaning it was 2 years to the day since Yosef had told the Saramashkim, since Yosef had told the Saramashkim that he was going to breed on the day of the birthday of Paro. 2 years to that day of the birthday, Paro Cholem. That night, Paro had a dream. Mine Omen of the Ori standing on top of the river. Quite a nice Rabbeinu Bechaya, what it means he was standing on top of the river. He considered himself, this was one of his proofs that he must be a god, that the river ended up becoming one of the gods of the Mitzrayim, and that he was standing on top of the river, which means that he himself must be in charge or more important than the river itself. A very nice little Rabbeinu Bechaya. But let's go back to last week's parsha. Yosef was in jail for 2 years. Why was he added on, and why was he put in jail for 2 years? Because he said two words to the Saramashkin. The two words that he said were, Kim Zechartani Yitcha, if you remember me, and then Behiz Kartani Oparo, and mention me to Paro. Because he said those words, Kartani, Behiz Kartani, those two words, so therefore he was punished to lose 2 years. Why 2 years, not 2 days, not 2 months, or whatever it is? There's a very nice Meshech Chachma. The Meshech Chachma says, a Malbim. The Malbim says that the king normally never had the Saramashkin anywhere near. The guy who was giving him the drinks, that guy was the Sar Hamashkin. He had other people that were doing the dirty work for him. But the Saramashkin himself, he was a guy who had, you know, he had like a big job. He was a guy in charge of everybody else. He was a guy, a person who had a big job in front of everybody else. He would never serve the king himself. There was only one time a year where he served the king. And that was on his birthday. So there were only two times when the Saramashkin actually got to see the king. So when it says two, it couldn't be 2 days later, or 2 weeks later, or 2 months later, because there was no time for him to have seen the king. It only could be 2 years later. So that's how we know that it was 2 years later. It happened to be on his birthday. That's the Malbim. That's how the Malbim understands it. I will tell you, ki im zichartani. Im zichartani. Im Zechartani, I think it is actually. Yeah, Im Zechartani is the gematria altogether of 730. 730 is 365 times 2, meaning 2 full years of 365 days. It was 2 years later the day. But you'll say, but his birthday, I don't know if he went by the solar calendar, the lunar calendar. I have absolutely no idea. But regardless, Im Zechartani is 730 times, it's 365 times 2. If I remember correctly, I think Ki Zechartani. Yeah, it is. Im Zechartani is 41. That's right. Im Zechartani plus the two words is 730. But I also, if you do Ki Zechartani is 30 instead of 41. So 30 plus Zechartani is altogether 11 days less. It'll be 719. 719 would be...
solar year and lunar year.
What would it be?
11 days less. If it's 11 less, then it's...
11 days less, but that's only for 1 year. Somehow it worked out. I don't remember how it worked exactly. All right, somehow it worked out last year when I did it. I forgot what it was exactly. Regardless, ki im zechartani, the im zechartani ends up being 365 times 2. That works out well. What was wrong, though? Why couldn't he go to the Saramashkim and ask the Saramashkim for help? What did he do wrong? He wanted to do it in a natural way. He didn't want God to just pluck him out of the earth and put him over there. He wanted to do it in a natural way. He wanted it to happen in a very, very natural way. So he went to the Saramashkim and he said, when you get out of jail, go tell Paro. That's a very simple thing to do. You can't compare it to other cases. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you can't say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, you wanted HaKadosh Baruch Hu to just pluck him out of jail, to just do a crazy miracle and to pluck him out of jail, have dreams and whatever it is to bring him out. He did it in a natural way. What's wrong with something like that? What's wrong with relying on somebody out there? So there's two answers. One is better than the other. I like the Talmud Menachem a lot. But the Ben Ish Chai says, 10 years he knew about the 10 drops of Shechva Zera Levatala that he lost were for the 10 years that he spent in jail. So the 10 years he knew about. The extra two years were never really supposed to happen. We know that, right? After 10 years are up, which we're almost up, 3 days from now, Yosef's going to get out of jail. 10 years are up, he Mamela was going to come out of jail. It's not that it was a miracle that Hashem would have to dump something for him to come out of jail. He knew that the only reason why he was in jail in the first place is because he had 10 drops of Shechva Zera Levatala. Except for he's in jail for 10 years. So after 10 years are up, he's going to leave jail. It wasn't a question of why should you go about it through miraculous means. It was an obvious, it'll happen, memela, that it was going to happen. So since he did something that was unnecessary, and he knew it was unnecessary, but he wanted to add it on just in case, that's already, come on, where's your bitachon on Hashem? Would we have been punished with that? Probably not. But Yosef HaTzadik was punished for that. Because he did something that was just a tiny little bit unnecessary. That tiny little bit unnecessary was too much. But the Talmid Chacham gives an unbelievable pshat. Think of it this way. In order to rely on someone, he has to be a kli, a vessel, that's able to be makabel the goodness of Hashem and Shemayim. Hashem makes a decision, and it goes through that guy. That guy has to be special in order for the thing to go through that guy. He's got to be really, really special. It can't just go through anybody. If you want to be a kli to do the work of what God wants, you got to really do it. You got to really be part of something. You got to really believe in God at least. If Yosef would have gone up to Yehuda, you know, his brother, and said, Yehuda, go say something to Paro, that would have been okay. If we would have gone to another brother like Binyamin, or somebody like a tzaddik, or even a normal person, a good person, that would have been good enough. But the Saramashkim, a Russia? You go to the Saramashkim, you expect God's plan to happen through a Russia? No way. That can't be. That's not going to happen. To that, HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Yosef, that's absolutely wrong. That's absolutely wrong. So yes, Shefa, the Shlichus of God, can be done through people. So you are allowed to ask people to do things for you. But be careful who you ask. You can't just ask anybody. You got to ask certain people that deserve to be asked. You got to go up to a person that deserves that asking. That's the only time that you can do that. That's how the Talmid Chacham explains that. I think that's a good, good answer. That's why he was punished. Because he asked the wrong person. He went the wrong way. He went the wrong direction. The wrong way of where he wanted to go.
It's not such a good answer, because you just say that that person was sent there for him.
God wouldn't have sent such a guy. I think that's the point of the answer, that God wouldn't have sent such a guy. There's no reason why that guy was chosen. What the question could come out with over here is the question of, well, wait a second, he did end up sending somebody else entirely. He did end up sending the Saramashkim to go to Paro after everything was said and done, and say, oh, Yosef's going to do the dream. So why'd that happen? So you have to say there was some type of maimer of a Kadosh Baruch Hu where Hashem made this decision and it came through anyway. Okay, that's that. Let's finish with that right now. Vayikatz Paro Vayishan. This is a very, very unbelievable thing also. So Miket starts, he has this dream, the first dream, of the thin cows and the fat cows and everything. And it says, right afterward, Vayikatz Paro, he woke up. And then it says right afterward, Vayishan, and he fell asleep, Vayachalom Shenis, and he dreamed a second time. So what does that mean? He woke up, and then he went back to sleep? Twice in Tanakh, does a king get a dream and doesn't go back to sleep? Number one is Avimelech. Avimelech got a dream in the middle of the night about Sar Imenu. He got a dream from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and he refused to go back to sleep. And then later on by Achashverosh. Achashverosh got a dream in the middle of the night, and immediately called everybody out there and said, bring in the book of Zichronos, the Sefer HaZichronos. Let's see, maybe I missed out on something. Because kings understand something. If you wake up in the middle of the night, now I don't mean if your kid wakes you up in the middle of the night, and I don't mean if you're the type of person who has to go to the bathroom every 20 minutes. That's not what I'm talking about. I mean, if you wake up in the middle of the night, and there's no reason for you to wake up, you just wake up and you're wide awake. You're wide awake. It just happens sometimes. You wake up at 3 in the morning, you look up. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is sending you a message. What he's doing is, says Miyam Loewes, he's throwing down your neshama, and he's saying, I don't want you up here anymore. Your neshama was up there in Shemayim, it was sitting around with all the other neshamas in Shemayim, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is taking your neshama, throwing it back down, and saying, get back down there. And you woke up for that reason. What you're supposed to do, immediately, says Miyam Loewes, is look through your past deeds. Maybe you did something wrong. Look through everything you did. Do not go back to sleep. Because that's just like, God, you know, you kick a guy out of the bar, you know, you take a guy, you kick the guy out of the bar or something, and he comes right back. What are you doing here? I just kicked you out. Get out of here. You don't fall back asleep. Kings understand that. Kings are on a very, very high level. So Avimelech and Achashverosh understood that. Even Achashverosh understood that. Achashverosh woke up in the middle of the night and he said, bring in the Sefer HaZichronos. There must be someone that I never rewarded. There must be someone around here that I never gave something to. Because there's no reason why God would kick me out of Shemayim for no reason. So what happened? What did I do? What did I do wrong? So he looked through his Sefer HaZichronos and he realized, I never paid back Mordechai. So what should I do? And that's when he went through the whole thing with Mordechai. And so to by Avimelech, he realized he did something wrong, so he went around, according to the Amloes, there were people singing in the middle of the night, not letting him sleep the whole night. He kept waking up. And he said, something's wrong over here. What happened? Why is God sending me these people to keep me up all night? What happened? I'm the king. This shouldn't happen to me. So he realized there's something wrong, and he realized that Sar Yimenu must be not who they say she is. And he realized something was wrong. Paro, King of Tuma, went right back to sleep. Didn't care. Yeah, I know. Okay, I'm going back to sleep. The dream, the first dream was good enough. The cows was good enough. You can translate everything based on that dream. It wasn't the fact that the shibboleth meant anything. It was the hishanos of the dream, the doubling of the dream that led them to believe that it was going to be quicker. But the fact that it was just cows, that was good enough to be able to explain everything. Yosef didn't need anything else. But Paro didn't care. He went right back to sleep. It shows you the Tumah Paro, but it kind of shows you what we ourselves are. Are you more like Paro, or are you more like Avimelech and Achashverosh? Not good categories. No matter what you look at, they're not good categories. It's like big Russia or somewhat Russia. Those are the categories. A tzaddik will be in the level where you get up in the middle of the night. Hopefully you spend the rest of the night just learning. I know, it's not going to happen for now, but maybe you'll just spend like 20 minutes. You'll just quickly wash an agavar, so we'll learn something and then fall asleep again on the couch. You know, something a little bit different. But that's the idea behind it. That's the idea behind what you're supposed to do over here. Now, the cartoon.
This isn't the pshat behind the halakha that when you get up in the morning, you're not supposed to go back to sleep, is it?
No, that's more like, that's more like you're lazy.
This happens every day.
Yeah, no, we're not talking about the snooze button. Snooze button is another issue altogether. That's also like, that's pure sultan. Pure sultan. There's no question about that. I don't know when the sultan came up with that idea of the snooze button, but it was an unbelievable idea. Like, that one really, really got him all going. Anyway, number three. Let's go, the Khartoumim. The Khartoumim came out with an answer. You know, the Paro went and told his dreams to these magicians and the dream sayers and everything. He told it over to them. And it's not like they didn't come up with an answer. They had an answer. Like, it's so strange. Rashi mentions what their answer is. It says, seven daughters will be captured. You will give birth to seven daughters. Seven daughters will be captured. Seven aparchios, seven lands will be out there with Tumah, and seven lands will be captured. I mean, what were these translations, and why do we have to know them? If they were dead wrong, and they were dead wrong, Paro never accepted them, they weren't right. So why did he have to say these dreams? Why would he translate the dreams? Okay, if the Khartoumim translated them, there's no reason for Rashi to tell us what they are. There's no reason for the Medrash Rabbah to go ahead and say, oh, these are the translations that the Khartoumim gave for the dreams. They were wrong. They weren't accepted. So just say they gave a translation, it didn't work, and that's it. You don't have to tell me what they were, so why bother? So there's unbelievable answers with this. So there's a Yalkut Ruveni that says that Paro was given another remez in this dream. It was not caught by Yosef. It was not caught by Yosef, but it was caught by the Khartoumim. When the Khartoumim Paro, the magicians of Paro, looked up in the stars, they did see a translation of the dream, but it wasn't the full translation of the dream, and that's why Paro didn't accept it fully. It was a somewhat translation. It somewhat translated the dream, but not exactly. What the remez was, is that Bnei Yisrael was going to end up controlling the Mitzrayim and take over Eretz Canaan. It's going to take over the Mitzrayim and Eretz Canaan. The Satan is given certain, gifts when he's up there in Shemayim. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to him, listen, I know what your job is out there. I'm going to make it a little bit easier for you. So he gives him certain things that when he sees a Gadol B'Yisrael, a guy who's going to be a tremendous leader of Bnei Yisrael, the Satan makes his shidduch. Think about it for a second. Moshe Rabbeinu, Yoshua, Yehuda, Yosef, Pinchas, Shimshon, and David. I think it's seven altogether. I think I miscounted over there. But again, Yehuda, Yosef, Moshe, Pinchas, Yoshua, Shimshon, and David. And those seven people. All seven of them, leaders of Klal Yisrael, all married Giorsim, or had something to do with Giorsim. Every single one of them. What's Pshad? So let's go through. Yehuda, we know, was with Tamar. Tamar, although she wasn't a full Jewess, there was somewhat of a Jewess within her, she was a daughter of Shem. Yosef, we know, married Osnas, who was from either Shechem and Dina, or she was a pure Mitzris. She was 100% a Mitzris. We know Moshe Rabbeinu married Sipporah, who was the daughter of Yisro. Pinchas' father, also Eliezer, also married a daughter of Yisro. There's also Yoshua, who married Rachav Azona. He married Azona. Azona was unbelievably well known from everybody. That was Rachav Azona. Shimshon, we know, was fooled by all the nose Plishtim, all the daughters of Plishtim. And David HaMelech, we know, was stuck with the Yafas Toar. There was the Yafas Toar involved. Leaders of Klal Yisrael were involved with all those different people, And what the Sultan was given was, you have the ability to have seven daughters, seven non-Jews, seven people who will be part of Tumah, who will be able to marry into the Jewish leaders. And they'll be able to try to convince the Jewish leaders to do something wrong. I'm giving you seven daughters, seven people to go ahead and try to convince those Jewish leaders do wrong. Now Moshe, Yoshua, and everybody else were powerful enough to be able to knock them down. But the whole dream of the seven cows, don't go home telling a girl this, but the cows refer to women. You can think of your own Ramazan, but the cows refer to women. And the seven fat cows, guess who that's referring to? Seven fat cows refer to the seven women who were the fat of tuma, full of tuma, all this tuma inside them. All these women were full of azona. Can you imagine azona, who everybody was with? Mary's Yeshua. These people were fat with tuma. To those people, the seven skinny cows, those skinny little rabbis, went and grabbed them and took them for themselves. Moshe, Yeshua, Pinchas, everybody else grabbed those wives for themselves and took away the tuma and turned them into kedusha. That was the dream that they saw, and that was the remez that they told to Paro. Paro was sitting there and said, I understand that. Fine, maybe that'll happen, but you got to go a little bit deeper. There's something a little bit deeper. He didn't like that. So they said, okay, what about the second dream, the Shibboleth? He said the wheat was coming out of the ground. It must refer to the ground itself. The seven nations of Canaan, those seven nations that are living in Canaan right now are the seven Shibboleth, the stalks of wheat that are the fat stalks of wheat, all out there full of tuma, full of all those things. They're going to be eaten by or covered up by the seven skinny pieces of wheat. Those seven skinny pieces of wheat are Bnei Yisrael. Why seven? Because if you subtract five shvatim that did not have a chilek in Bnei Yisrael itself, so you have to explain it a little bit like this. There was, obviously we know Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, etc. Levi did not have a chilek in Eretz Yisrael. Shimon did not have a chilek in Eretz Yisrael. Reuven did not have a chilek in Eretz Yisrael. Gad did not have a chilek in Eretz Yisrael. And now this is hard. Dan. Depends where Dan was. But Dan moved themselves out of Eretz Yisrael, depending on how the Navi puts it. But you have five Shvatim that didn't have a chelik in Eretz Yisrael. Or you can say maybe half a Shevet because of Menashe, and that's half of Yosef, whatever it is. But five of them didn't. 12 minus 5 is? Very good! Seven nations altogether. So seven parts of Bnei Yisrael, seven skinny things of wheat, were able to take over the seven fat things of wheat, and that's what the dream was referring to. So the Chartumim were not just saying like random things off the street, and just saying like, oh, seven Parim and seven Shibboleth. It's a very obvious answer to the dream that their two main sources of food are cows and things of wheat. They didn't eat the sheep because the sheep are their gods. So they ate cows and they had wheat. So if you would have had a dream like that and the skinny ones, and famine was a very common thing back then, it was extremely obvious what these dreams were talking about. There's no reason why they shouldn't know. It says Yonas ben Uziel, it was purposely hidden from them so they wouldn't give the correct translation so that Yosef would come up with it. But they weren't saying a wrong translation. Their translation is still correct. It's just that Paro said there's something else to this dream. There's something else there that you're missing. There's something else there that must be here because that can't be it. It can't be that you're just done with that. That's the idea behind all those things. Okay, those are the seven aparchios. Who is this Paro guy? Like, he comes along and he thinks he's so great. You know, he's got these dreams and everything. And it could be he lived for thousands of years. He might have been the king of Nineveh later on. Who is this guy? Where did this guy come up from? So it's a Seder Adoros that brings us down. I haven't said this in a couple years. Medrash brings down there was a guy by the name of Rekayon. Rekayon was a man who lived in Shinar, Eretz Shinar, near Babel. He lived near Babylonia. So Rekayon was a very, very smart guy, but he just couldn't make a living. He could never make a living. And he was always upset. You know, he could never just put two and two. He never got his money. So finally, you know, somebody suggested to him, why don't you go down to the king of Egypt? Go down to the king of Egypt. So he said, okay, you know, now I'll go check it out. Some people say his name was Dion Barvolid. I have no idea if he's related to Dion Sanders, but I think their last names are different. But Dion Barvolid was the name of the king of Mitzrayim at the time. So he said, go down to this guy named Dion, and you know, whatever, you can set yourself up with him. You're a smart guy. You'll do well with him. So Rekayon went down to Mitzrayim. He ended up finding that the king only appears once a year. He only appeared once a year, similar to what we had with Chanoch. He only came out once a year. The rest of the year, nobody could go greet him. 364 days a year, he was gone, and nobody could be able to greet him. So Rekayon was all upset about this. So Rekayon said, well, what am I going to do? They said, go to the shuk, go to the marketplace, and go sell something. So he went and he picked some wildflowers or, you know, whatever something, went to the marketplace, but he didn't know how the marketplace worked. So people were taking from him, not paying, giving him this, giving him that. They'd give him coins, and you know, whatever. He lost all his money, lost all his flowers. He got nothing at the end of the day. He's starving. He has no food. He goes into a shack, and he goes to sleep that night, cries himself to sleep. Next morning, he's got a crazy idea. He goes and he hires 300 strong men and tells them, I'm going to give you your pay after a week, but you're going to get paid very, very well. And then he stands those 300 strong men outside of the massive Beis HaKvaros in Mitzrayim, outside the massive cemetery in Mitzrayim. Son of the Master Cemetery. And he told them, don't let anyone in by order of the king. Say that the king ordered you not to let anyone in unless they pay you 200 gold pieces. So the strong men stood there, and the people started bringing their dead in, but they couldn't. They had to pay 200 gold pieces. They said, why should we bring 200 gold pieces? He said, the king says so. They said, oh, we can't argue with the king. So they paid the 200 gold pieces over to these guys. Rei Kayon became an unbelievably rich man. And they said, well, I guess we'll go to the king when the king comes back. The king wasn't coming back for another 300 days. Over those 300 days, a lot of people died. Rei Kayon made a fortune, an absolute fortune over those days. He made a ton of money. So the king of Mitzrayim came back. He sat down on his throne. Dion did, you know, sat down on his throne. And he sat there and he said, okay, so what's up, guys? He said, why do you make this tax about burying the dead? So the king said, I don't know what you're talking about. I never made such a tax. I never did that. Who's doing such a thing? They said, Rei Kayon. They said, Rei Kayon, bring that guy to me. So Rei Kayon, smart guy, sent over tons of children with tons of treasures and little gifts for him. One child after the other child after the other child, one after the other in front of the king. And the king's like, oh, this is nice. Wow, this is nicer. Oh, this is nicer. All of a sudden he comes riding on a beautiful white horse, dressed up in his finest, saying to the king, I did it all for you. All the money that I just gathered, I'm giving to the treasury. The king's like, all right, good. All right, we'll go ahead and do it. So the people said, no, we can't do it anymore. So the king said, okay, from now on you won't do it. But because I'm not here for 364 days out of a year, hey, Rei Kayon, why don't you become king? So Rei Kayon said, hey, I never thought that would ever happen. So he was like, yeah, sure, I'll become king. And they called him, based on what he did, the Egyptian equivalent of paying him off. Paro. Para is the Hebrew word. Whatever they called him, they called him the Egyptian equivalent of the word paro. That's what they called him in Mitzrayim. Rei Kayon ended up becoming this paro for 364 days a year. He became king for 364 days a year. Eventually, I think we all realize, he kicked out the other king. He didn't let Dion back, or he killed off Dion, and he became the king of Mitzrayim. That's who paro was. Now, that's who paro was. The Moed Katan, the Gemara Moed Katan says in the Yud Chesem and Aleph, most unbelievable Gemara in the world. Paro was an amma tall. That means a foot and a half tall. His beard was an amma long. That means it went on the ground a little bit, because it's an amma tall and it starts over here. That beard is flowing on the ground a little bit. But it says something unbelievable. And it's just, we'll have to explain with the Ben Ish Chai. Parmastico is an amma long. A certain part of his body, which is not the nicest thing to say, was an amma long, a foot and a half long. Now that is totally unnecessary. One of those Gemaras that you read and you're just like, he's got to mean something else. There's no way he means that. What's the pshat behind that? The Ben Ish Chai says that he was the king of Znus in Mitzrayim, the king of Arias, the king of everything, the king of Kishuf. He was the man who, he was the guy who was the king of all the Arias, who knew what to do with all different types of Arias and knew all these different types of magics. He's the king of Tuma. That guy was for sure the king of Mitzrayim. Like, he was perfect to be the king of Mitzrayim. A little small guy, the Ben Ish Chai also says, the smaller you are, the trickier you are. I don't know if that's been proven scientifically, but he does say, the smaller you are, the trickier you are. So I know, whatever. So he says that's what Paro was like. Paro was a tricky little guy full of znus. Full of znus. That was what he was about. Now, Asnas, he goes ahead, Paro goes ahead and gives him a girl by the name of Asnas. Gives him a girl by the name of Asnas. It says over here, I'm sorry, it says, Memhe, Vayitin Lois Asnas bas Potiphar Koinon. Potiphar's daughter. That's really nice. Potiphar's daughter. Who is Asnas? So Chazal say that when Dina was with Shechem, Shechem and Dina had a daughter. That daughter was not named, but the Shvatim wanted to kill her, to get rid of all of Canaan within Bnei Yisrael, to get rid of all the Tuma of Canaan within Bnei Yisrael. Yaakov wouldn't allow that to happen, so it's unbelievable. So he took the daughter and threw her into a briar bush, a sneh. Threw into a sneh. Thus she was called Asnas. Threw into a sneh. Knowing that Gavriel, the Malach, was going to take her and bring her over to a family who would raise her as a child. So she was raised by Potiphar. But before he put her in the sneh, he took a little golden kamiya, a little golden amulet, put it around her neck, and wrote in Lashon HaKodesh, I am a granddaughter of Yaakov Avinu from Dina and Shechem. Wrote it in Lashon HaKodesh. And he put it around her neck, and it stayed around her neck. Asnas could never read it, because nobody in Mitzrayim knew Lashon HaKodesh. Kodesh. They knew Ivrit, but they didn't know Lashon HaKodesh. So they had no idea how to read the little writing on top of that kamiya, so nobody could ever tell. When Yosef became king of all Mitzrayim and was going around wearing the white clothing and the chariot and all the gold and everything, all the women got up on top of the walls to go look at Yosef, because they heard that he was the most beautiful person in the world. Midrashim say that women, when they were cutting apples, if Yosef would stop by, they would cut off their fingers at the exact same time, which is disgusting, but also kind of weird at the same time. It's an unbelievable thing that people would just go everywhere to be able to see Yosef, how beautiful he was. People were throwing things down at him. Like at a concert, people throwing things on the stage. Like people were throwing things down at him. So what she decided to do, what Asnas decided to do was, this is the smartest person in the world. He probably knows this. She took off the kamiya and threw it down at Yosef. Yosef opened it up and said, oh my gosh, there's a granddaughter of Yaakov Avinu here. Not knowing that this, they had no idea that this had happened, that this person was down here. So he went searching around for her, Cinderella story, started looking around, who does this amulet fit, and realized that it was right around, it was by Asnas. So he went ahead and married Asnas. He never told anyone. Only later on, when Yaakov Avinu doubted the veracity of his children, and doubted how, whether his children were real children, whether they were from a Mitzri or whatever it was, that's when Yaakov said, Asher Nosan Li Elokim Bazeh. God gave me her with this. And he gave him back the tablet. And Yaakov Avinu looked at the tablet and realized, wow, Mida Kenegamida. What's in a Mida Kenegamida? I read this from the I forgot what the Perisha Masholish and Rashi. Unbelievable answer. The pshat is that, what did Yosef do in front of Rachel? He stood in front of Rachel when Esav was trying to look at her. Yosef stood in front of her so that Esav wouldn't see. So that Esav wouldn't be able to see Rachel. What did Yaakov do with Dina? Yaakov hid Dina in a little chest so that Esav wouldn't marry Dina. Now think about this. Yaakov was punished. What was the punishment for hiding Dina? Oh, you're not going to give Dina to Esav? Fine. Dina will be raped by Shechem. But Yaakov had thoughts of L'shem Shamayim. Yaakov was doing it for the right reason. So because you were doing it for the right reason, the daughter will be zocha to marry someone who hid somebody else. Who did the exact same thing that happened to Dina? That will be given over to the person who also did something similar, and that was Yosef. So Asnas was married off to Yosef for that reason. That was an unbelievable thing also. Now the Shvatim came down to Mitzrayim. They came down to Mitzrayim. Oh, by the way, Es Asnas is the same gematria of Hibaz Dina Haisa, 913. That also is up there. There's a Chidah that also says that the gematria of Asnas is Ashrei, and he goes in, if you take on the 30 years of Yosef, that Yosef was in Mitzrayim when he married Asnas, it's 30. That's a Lamed plus Ashrei, which is Yisrael. So she stood for all of Eretz Yisrael. Okay, there's a lot behind it. Either way, Shvatim came down to Mitzrayim. You know where they went first? Take a guess. Where would you think? You go down to Mitzrayim first. What's the first place you're going to go? First place. Pyramids. You know, Sphinx, maybe. Check out the Sphinx. Do a little sightseeing. Take a little pictures, you know? Something like that.
Pyramids, there
you? Jonas and Ben Uziel. Yeah, they were. Jonas and Ben Uziel. Yo, you know that one?
Yes.
Oh, that's not for now. Jonas ben Uziel. This is going online. Jonas ben Uziel says, in Perek Mem Beis Pasuk Vav, they found them in the Shuk of Zonos. In the place where there were a lot of zonas, a lot of prostitutes. Probably not the best place for the Shvatim. I can think of better places to go. Like if I had, you know, the Sphinx is a better place. The pyramids. Why in the world were they in the Shukshel Zonos? So, Chazal explain. Unbelievable. They knew that Yosef was down in Mitzrayim. They figured, where was Yosef? Yosef's a beautiful guy, right? It's probably the king's Zona. They had no faith in Yosef. They mamash thought he was the lowest of the low. So the first place they looked was the Shukshel Zonos. They looked around there for 3 days, searching around for Yosef HaTzadik, looking around to see where Yosef HaTzadik was, looking all around the Shukshel Zonos. But now you understand why Yosef called them Meraglim, called them spies. Where did Pinchas and Kalev go when they went to check out Yericho by Yoshua? Where did they go? They went to Rachav HaZona. Why did they go to Rachav HaZonas? Rashi says, because the Zonas know all the secrets of the kingdom. Because all the kings and the officers and everybody go to the Zonas. So the Zonas know everything, because they don't care. What do the Zonas know? So why? So the smartest thing you can do when you're trying to spy out a land is you go to the Zonas and you ask them, so what have people told you lately? What have people told you recently? If you want to be a spy, that's the first place you should go. So the first thing that Yosef said to them was, Meraglim Atem. You guys are a bunch of Meraglim, you're spies. Why else would be in a Shukshel Zonos? You guys look holy. There's no reason you would be there to be with the Zonos Chas V'Shalom. So what were you there for? You were spying on me. You were trying to find out all the different secrets of the kingdom. So smart. Now, the Shvatim can't ask anything. They see a white boy that's in charge of a whole land full of black people in Mitzrayim. See a white boy on the throne. You don't think they're going to ask questions? Hey, who is that guy? Oh, he's some Ivri. Oh, an Ivri. Oh. Really? How did he get here? Oh, he sold down to Mitzrayim as a slave. He ended up going to... He interpreted dreams. Really? You don't think they would put one in one? It's not even 2 and 2 anymore. It's 1 and 1 together. They would realize this is Yosef HaTzadik. Now Yosef made sure they can't ask any questions. They ask any questions about Yosef, then he said, I know you're spies now. And then he'll throw them straight into jail. So he did it on purpose. He called them Meraglim. He had a reason because they were in the Shuk Shel Zonos, and because of that, they couldn't ask any questions, because if they would ask any questions, then they'd for sure be Meraglim. So they weren't allowed to ask any more questions. That was the perfect plan for him to be able to do it. Now, what does Vayisnaker mean? He made himself look strange. Rashi says he had a beard. Now, I don't know if you've seen a guy with a beard and without a beard. Maybe it takes like a double take. You know, you look at him again, and you're just like, what? You know, you have that like little, like, huh? I went to pick up my dad with my mom. I think I was 7 or 8. And I went to pick up my dad from a baseball game. And he had just shaved his beard off. The first time I'd ever seen him with his beard shaved off. And he came up to the car and sat down in the car and started driving. I'm like, where's dad? Where's dad? You know, but I was 7 years old. And I didn't really have a good look at him. And my dad is pretty weird looking without a beard. So, you know, it was like one of those things where, like, I just couldn't really recognize it. But you mean to tell me that no one out of them all, the Shvatim, they looked at Yosef and they're like, oh, that doesn't look like Yaakov Avinu at all. Yosef was a duplicate of Yaakov Avinu. He looked exactly like Yaakov Avinu. Nobody recognized him. Nobody looked at him and said, oh, it's Yosef with a beard. Wow, isn't that coincidental? Man, and he's white. Nobody said that. So sure, the Ramban says that he wore an Egyptian mask. You know, they used to wear masks back then. Fox mask and whatever, he wore that. There are answers. There are answers that they give. There's other answers. What's the other answer? The Balaturim says that Gavriel stood in front of him, made like a mirror so they wouldn't be able to see him exactly. And the Taimin Hagim says that they wouldn't look at the face of a Rasha. So they refused to look at Yosef Atzadi. They never looked. Every time they looked at him, they looked like above the guy. They were staring right above their heads, you know? And like in speeches, you're not supposed to look at anybody when you're speaking because you might laugh. So you always look above their heads. So that's how they were looking. So they didn't really see Yosef Atzadi. Those are answers. Those are very good answers. But Rashi, what did Rashi mean? He had a beard. And it's really not Rashi, it's a Gemara. How could the Gemara even say that? So, I have this comparison. It's not a very good comparison, but I think you can somewhat figure it out. Superman, how did he change?
I was going to say that also.
Superman had glasses. And for some reason, nobody could figure out through glasses. It wasn't even big horn rims, you know? It was like small little rims. Like, I'm not asking, okay, fine, it's a movie, I know, it's a comic book, so you can't ask in a comic book. You can't ask on Midrashim and you can't ask on comic books. Fine, I understand that. But what was the Havamina? Meaning, when they first made that comic book, when they said, like, you know, we're going to hide Superman, like Spider-Man, at least he wore a mask over his whole face. There, you can't tell. But you know, we're going to hide Superman? We'll hide him behind glasses. Who thought of that idea? And why wasn't it rejected?
You know how smart it was?
How smart?
Because no humans can realize that somebody that powerful would try to be like a normal human.
Like a normal human being. Be like a little klutz, like Clark Kent.
That's okay. Why I was so smart.
The pshat is not like that. Cool. Pshat is not like that. No, there is a real pshat. You know what the pshat is? Superman, when he took off his glasses, he might have looked like Superman, but he still had the suit on like Clark Kent. Once he put on the tights and the outside underwear and the big S on his thing, it wasn't the fact he could have worn glasses then. People would have still said, that guy's Superman. Because they would have realized, it's not the glasses that changes a person. It's the clothes as well as everything else that changes the person. It's everything altogether. It's the whole manner. It's not just the beard. It's everything altogether. So the push-up shot behind it is, the way Rashi is going to have the push-up shots, is that Rashi is trying to say that, yes, he had a beard, but it was an entirely different person. He has a beard staying, looking with the look of the Mitzrayim. He looked like an Egyptian with a beard. He probably had a bald head. Probably was wearing the Egyptian clothing. Probably had everything out there. He looked like a normal Egyptian, except he had a beard. He kept the beard. He had the little thing. He had the pious, you know, he had the little simonim, you know, and that's it. But he just had the beard. It wasn't the fact that he just had a beard. It was everything altogether that changed him around completely. The beard was just the start of it. That was the only thing that made him look somewhat alike. But everything else was also changed. There's another answer. This answer is an awesome answer. Yonas ben Uziel is praised in the Gemara in Sukkah Chaf Chesem Aleph and in another place, somewhere in, forget, Kiddushin maybe? So Yonas ben Uziel is praised that whenever he was learning, birds over his head burned up. Birds over his head burned up. It just went into nothing, right? So like that's how powerful his Torah was. That his Torah was like a fire straight to Shemayim. It's like a bolt of fire that went straight to Shemayim. It's unbelievable. Burnt up all the birds above him. So everybody asked. The Achronim asked. So what was Hillel like? His Rebbe. That'd be so cool. He could like burn clouds, you know, like have airplanes go ahead and like rooftops, like oh, you know, you wouldn't be able to stand inside a house. Like Hillel's got to be really cool, right? Gemara said. So the Marsha says no. By Hillel, the birds didn't burn. So you think, okay, I can do that also. I'm pretty good at that also. Like, I've learned with the bird going over my head, sometimes I go to the bathroom on me even. You know, like, it's like I've been able to do such a thing. So like, well, what's the big deal about him being able to go and not have them burn up? The pshat is, he was able to turn it off. He's able to keep it inside him and be able to make sure that the fire did not affect any of the birds above him. He's able to sort of like turn it off for a little bit. That's how great Hillel was. Jonas ben Uzziel was so great that it went up, but he couldn't stop it from happening. So if you would go above Jonas ben Uzziel at that time, you'd lose an arm. It'd be like a lightsaber. It was just dangerous. But Hillel had the ability to be able to stop that from happening. He was able to turn it off. The Shvatim had a certain glow to them. They had a kedusha that showed on their outside faces. It showed on their faces. You could tell there were different types of people, that they were extremely kadosh. They showed it on the outside. Yosef also had that kedusha. But Yosef was more powerful than them. He was able to turn it off. So when the Shvatim saw Yosef, they saw it looked like Yosef. But they also knew that there's a shine to the Shvatim. Even Yosef at Tzadik had that shine. Even though they thought he was a Rasha, he still had that shine. So when they saw him, they said, this can't be Yosef. There's no way, because he doesn't have the shine. What they didn't realize is that Yosef turned it off. He made sure that as soon as they came in, by his not care, he made himself look strange to them. He turned off his shine. He turned off the extra little look that he had, that all the Shvatim had as well. And for that, the Shvatim didn't realize it. But later on, when it says he showed them the bris, it didn't mean literally he showed them the bris milah. It means that he showed them the shine back. He turned himself back on. And it was such a bright light, it made the Shvatim die. We'll talk about that next time. But it was such a bright light, it was crazy. They'd never seen such a bright light before, because Yaakov Avinu never did it so great. Now, I don't want to go into the whole thing of why Yosef went through with this. We're going to try to explain another derech. There's two drachim, basically. It is really 12 drachim, but there's two drachim that I know well, in which Yosef did what he did with the Shvatim. Why he tried fooling them and getting them there. There's a Ramban. The Ramban says he wanted to be Mekayim the dreams. He wanted to make sure that the dreams that he had came true. It's a little strange. You're going to do all this and lie and do this and that and whatever just to make sure your dreams come true? What does that mean? I mean, it's a little... how does that work? So we have to explain that, but it's not for now. That's not for now. There's two svaras that we have. It's going to be for next week, hopefully, in Parshas Vayigash. But there is something unbelievable. Gavriel did what with Yosef right before he met the king Paro? What did Gavriel do with Yosef? Taught him 70 languages, right? But Malachim don't know 70 languages. They only know Hebrew. They know it. They know it. Hashem allows them to know whatever they want. They just don't like learning it. It's like, I'll sit there and like, you know, I can learn, I can understand Yiddish. I just don't like it. You know, I just don't like the language. I don't like the language. I can understand a person from Great Britain, you know, a guy from London talking to me. I just don't like it. I prefer not to listen to it. I try to pretend like I don't know what he's saying and then I walk away. Like, that's okay. Like, there's certain things. This is a little bit of a difference between me and the Malachim, but there's a difference. The Medrash says the following. Gavriel tried to teach Yosef the languages. The Lohava Kagomar. He wasn't getting it. So he added on a hey to Yosef's name, and then Yosef got it. That works. And hey, he was known as Yehosef. And all of a sudden he's like, oh, now I get French. All of a sudden something worked. What happened? Then he tried telling it to Paro. Paro said, you got to teach it to me. Velohava gomar. He never learned it. What's the difference called gomar versus gomar? What's the difference between them? What happened between them? So you got to have a revulsion. You got to have a revulsion somewhere around here, right? There's got to be something around here. This is sakana to learn other languages. Every language in the world, every one of the 70 languages, comes with a bit of tuma. English comes with a bit of tuma. German comes with a bit of tuma. French comes with a bit of tuma. Everything comes with a bit of tuma with it. And each one is a different klipa. The Rama Mipano, one of the Talmidim of the Arizal, said one of the reasons why he can't understand certain Maimara of the Arizal is because he knows Latin. And he can't get that out of his head. If he didn't know Latin, he would be able to understand those certain kavanas of the Arizal. But because he knows Latin, it's impossible for him to do it. Knowing other languages is a hindrance based on the tuma of that language. It's an unbelievable thing. So Yosef did not want to learn it. He didn't want to learn all those other languages. He didn't want to learn. When Gavriel said, all right, I'm here to teach you the 70 languages, he said, heck no! I don't want to learn those languages. I don't want to have that tuma within me. There's no way. I don't want any of those languages. Don't tell me anything. Don't tell me a thing. La, la, like screaming out loud. I don't want to learn anything. So what did Gavriel do? All these languages have a bit of Kedusha within them. They come from the last hey of the Shem Havaya, Yud Hei Vav Hei. They come from that last hey. The last hey of the name of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Yud Hei Vav Hei. That last hey teaches you all the languages of the world through Kedusha. It's very hard to learn it that way, but that's where all the other languages come from. They come from that last hey. So what Gavriel did was he took that hey and he put it into Yosef's name and he made it Yehosef. And once he made it Yehosef, he was now able to understand all the languages because kedusha. Not only did he learn it be kedusha, it was mamish limud haTorah. He was learning Torah when he got that hay. It was an unbelievable thing for him. He understood every single one of the 70 languages within it in the kedusha takeaway. It's only when the languages come down to earth that the chitzonius comes around and they surround it with klipas and it becomes all disgusting and whatever, full of tumah. But when it's up in shemayim, those 70 languages are still holy. The malachim are still speaking holy languages. So Gavriel gave him the 70 languages over there. He put a hay in his name and he automatically made him learn it. That's why it says lo hava kagomar. He wouldn't allow himself to be taught it. Lo hava kagomar. He refused to learn it in the first place. That's what it means. He refused to learn it. So Gavriel had no choice but to say, okay, you don't want to learn it, so I'll give you the hay. He gave him the hay and he understood it through the kedusha of the language. He got the kedusha of the language. The languages that are written in the Torah, like totafos. Totafos is two in Kaspi and two in Afriki. That's Kas and Pas are two and two. Those languages, that's the kedusha of the language. There are certain words that are kadosh of that language. You can learn the whole language from them that are written in the Torah. He took that stuff and he gave it over to Yosef. But Paro wanted to learn the actual language. See, Yosef tried explaining to him Lashon HaKodesh, but we'll have a gomar. He just didn't get it. Paro was just a dummy. He just didn't get it. That's the difference. Yosef didn't want to learn it. He got it through the hay. But Paro wanted to learn it. He just didn't get it. Therefore, law of a gomar. That's the difference between Yosef and Paro. Yosef and Paro. And that's the real pshat behind why Yosef needed to learn these 70 languages. We'll end with this. Is the pshat that Bnei Yisrael and our Golos need to know the 70 languages of the other nations in order to become powerful within that nation. The only reason why we're so powerful is because we are part of that tumah. And our kedusha adds into that tumah, and we make it more powerful. We make it stronger. We add on a bit of kedusha to that tumah to make it powerful. You think it's just by chance that Alan Greenspan was in charge of the entire world? That when he retired, it had to be another Jew. I forgot what the guy's name is. What?
Bernanke.
That's his name.
What's his last name?
Bernanke.
Ben Bernanke.
Ben Bernanke.
Yeah.
What a weird name. All right, I mean, it doesn't even sound like a Jewish name. All right, whatever, but it is a Jew. And you think it's just by chance? You think it's just by chance that Steven Spielberg took over Hollywood? You think it's just by chance? They got to add in a little bit of the Kedusha of Jews to add on to the tumah of the world. Now, I'm not going to the protocols of the elders of Zion that we're trying to take over the world. No. We're not trying to do that. It's just a fact of life that we have the Kedusha that they need in order to make it into something, you know, something real. We have that Kedusha. We add it onto their tumah. So we need to know the languages for that. Yosef said, I refuse to do that. I don't want the people to become powerful. You can become powerful in a nation by being like me. He was still known as Yosef. Even though Paro named him Tzafnas Paneach, he kept his name Yosef. He only spoke Egyptian when he wanted the people to hear him. But he spoke Hebrew at home. He spoke Hebrew to everybody else. He spoke still the Lashon HaKodesh that he had over to everyone else around there. That was one thing that he did. And that's the reason why. Because you got to understand, Hebrew is not a language that's our first language anymore. But it should be made that way. The Ben Ish Chai used to only speak Hebrew on Shabbos. He never spoke in Arabic on Shabbos. He refused to. Even though Arabic and Aramaic is so close to the language of Hebrew, he refused to do it. Because he didn't want that to happen. That's the idea behind the other languages. We're going to stop with that, guys. Have a good Shabbos.